danger zone. This is Raylan Allen. I'm the publisher of RumorMillNews.com. We've been around for 12 long years. And this is, you're listening to RumorMillNewsRadio.com on the Micro Effect Radio Network. I'd like to welcome my guest, Dr. Deneen Peterson from StopTheNorthAmericanUnion.com website. Hello, Dr. Peterson.
Hello.
I hope I got that website right. I didn't have it in front of me. It's StopTheNorthAmericanUnion.com?
You've got it.
Okay, great. You know, you posted something on Rumor Mill News a couple of days ago, and of course, we get news in so much because we're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, worldwide. We have agents all over the world that are posting in the middle of the night. Well, your article is, or was, halfway down the page, and I felt that it was so important. I pulled it up the page, so it's almost right at the top of the page, in the reading room of RumorMillNews.com. So if any of our listeners want to pull up RumorMillNews.com, go into the reading room. You're going to see some of the things that we're going to discuss. But, Deneen, I wanted to tell you about something that just got posted, and it's under legal debate right now. The question is, do bloggers qualify as lobbyists? They're holding meetings at the moment, Public Disclosure Commission in the state of Washington. They will meet on December 4th to decide whether people like you and me are lobbyists. Oh, my God, we're going to have to register. And what if they don't allow us to register?
Well, you see, there's only one problem. We're missing the key ingredient. I don't think there's a lobbyist that approaches a politician in this country, I don't care at what level, that doesn't come with a little bit of green stuff. And I sure don't have that.
We sure don't, do we? You know, We've staked our, we're like the founders of this country. We've staked our lives and our fortunes on what we are doing to save this country. Anyway, I have been listening to that video that you posted in your article, and the article is called Heads Up, The Noose is Tightening, and then I added Stop the North American Union, because I felt that the listeners of this audience could find it a lot easier if it had Stop the North American Union on it.
Okay.
But I want to get into that video that you have posted, the Lisbon Treaty. When I first turned it on and listened to the Irishman talking about Ireland, you know, all the safety nets fell away. There was nobody to protect all of Europe except Ireland. And I mean, you can hear I'm choking up. The video is just so impressive. People have to go read your article. They have to go to your webpage. They have to watch this video. Can you tell a little more about it? I mean, I literally am choking up. It hit me so hard this morning that even talking about it, Ireland stopped the New World Order.
They certainly did, and it was in grand style because they had more than the deck completely stacked against them.
Absolutely.
What happened was, I think it was back in 2005, and there actually was a huge grand signing ceremony amongst the 25 countries at the time, and now 27 countries that are involved in the EU. And they were putting forth the EU Constitution. The EU Constitution, for those who don't know, is right straight out of communist Russia. Many people have read it, and that's what they've said it is. I have not read it, but I trust the people that say this. They're MEPs, they're people in positions of, no, that know. There's several good videos that discuss it. And the comment at the time was, if there was one country that voted no to that constitution, that was it. They would have to start all over, come back to the bargaining table, decide on a new constitution, or rewrite it somehow. Well, two countries did say no. France said no, and the Dutch said no. So what happened at that point was, I remember very distinctly, Blair came out and said, oh, we don't need to have to go through this whole process of approving of the Constitution. We can just write another amendment to one of the five treaties we've already signed, the treaties that have fed the states of the countries like Britain and France and Germany. In Britain's case, they literally did exactly what they're trying to do here. They took away habeas corpus. You know, they did all sorts of things in violation of their constitution and their Bill of Rights, okay? So, okay, two countries said no. Well, then I heard Blair's comment about, well, all we have to do is just take one of the treaties we've signed now between the 25 or 27 countries, and we can add a little addendum to it, a little codicil to it, and we'll, you know, create the approval for the European Union Constitution. Well, it didn't quite work out like that. What they settled on was the Lisbon Treaty, a separate treaty, not just adding on to one that was already existing. And so it was the same constitution, but they did a really dirty thing. They stopped calling it a constitution. Secondly, they added a whole lot more things to it. And what they did was, instead of placing the constitution in the Lisbon Treaty, all they put in the Lisbon Treaty were more rules, more harmonizations, more regulations. They left the real constitution out of there. They just referred to it, okay? So now you have two huge documents that have, and they would not allow anybody to take the original constitution and now this Lisbon quote-unquote treaty and meld them together so that you could read from the front cover to the back cover and know exactly what you were going to be voting on.
They reduced the font.
That's exactly what they did. They said, well, we don't want people to know we've added all this more stuff to it, so we need to make it smaller. So they did. They didn't remove anything. They just made the font smaller. That's exactly what they did.
So they wrote a real mini treaty. So mini,
oh, yeah.
No one could read it.
Exactly. But the real kicker about, you know, doing that was, this time, the people weren't going to get the opportunity to, they weren't going to get the opportunity to ratify it. That's the word I was trying to think of before. And the ratification process got stopped in the prior go-round by France and the Dutch. So they didn't want to take that risk. So what they did was they strong-armed the heads of 27 countries to not put it up for ratification, okay? And there was at least eight countries out of that 27 whose constitutions did not permit doing that, just having the heads of state sign over the rights of all the people in their country and ratify it, okay? There was only one country, Ireland, who said, nope, we're not going to contravene our constitution. We will have a ratifying vote by the people. Well, it was really interesting. European things, especially Britain, they have a lot of pomp and circumstances and certain propriety and, rules of niceness and et cetera, et cetera.
Of course.
Well, when the European Union, the European Commission really runs the unit, there's an unelected and unaccountable group of people, and the European president is there for 6 months at a time. They change chairs. It's like musical chairs. They literally run the European Union. Not the people, not the MEPs that go to Brussels and sit down and vote. In Brussels, they might get 50 votes to do, and they're told, you know, you vote yes on this, you vote no on that, you vote no on this, you vote yes on that. And they get a minute to speak, against it. The rules are ridiculous, and they're done on purpose, of course. Well, the MEPs, when they found out that they were not going to have countries people ratifying that the Constitution, which was the same Constitution but worse, they revolted. They had a big standing. They wore T-shirts, you know, saying, you know, let the people ratify, that sort of thing. They held up big signs. This is all in the Brussels place where they vote. Like you know, if you look at the UN, it's a giant place that's full of a lot of seats, and the decorum was shot. But it didn't happen. They left it to the Irish, and they had a literal war in Ireland between the yes no's, yes people that wanted the yes vote and the people that wanted the no vote, and the little people won. It was quite a victory. I mean, I literally followed it day by day up until the time that they voted, and it was a real victory. What Ireland did understand was that there are 500 million people in the EU, that small country got to vote on behalf of that 500 million people.
That's right.
And the little people won, but they didn't win. Because what happened was, after that was done, the European Union did exactly what it has always done in every issue, in every item, in every venue. They just simply went ahead. They don't care what the people have to say. They don't want to know what the people have to say. They're dictators.
Plutocratic oligarchy is the way you describe them.
Yes.
And can you define plutocracy and oligarchy?
Yes, it's really very simple. A plutocracy, I'm boiling it down to a few words. A plutocracy is a government of the wealthy, by the wealthy, and for the wealthy. And an oligarchy is the rule of the many by the few, and that certainly describes them. The people that are running the European Union are not poor people, okay? They're the movers and the shakers. They're the string pullers. They're the dominant beasts in all of Europe. And, of course, behind that, underneath that, underlaying that, behind that is the money. And that's why I call it a plutocratic oligarchy, because that's exactly what it is.
Well, I think it describes our government pretty well, too.
Oh, I think you're right on the money there. The real government of our country, you mean, the one that we don't see.
Well, I'm beginning to think that we never even became a separate country. I think that from the time we thought we won our independence from England, all we really did was win our independence from the King of England, and we went under, you know, the oligarchs, I call the City of London.
Mm-hmm. No, I actually watched a C-SPAN video today of the speech by the mayor of the City of London, and at it was the British Prime Minister Brown giving a speech, and all I heard was democracy, 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 and what was the other word that he said? Oh, global. Everything was global. Global, 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 global. I mean, that's what you got out of that speech. They want one world government, and they think that they say it long enough and loud enough, as was said by Goebbels, that we'll believe it.
Well, you know, democracy, you know, the people will vote themselves, raise every chance they get. You know, literally voting in a socialistic country, which is what, you know, you can see America doing. I mean, but what they're going to do is they're going to vote themselves into bankruptcy and anarchy and chaos and then eventual dictatorship. I don't think that a true, you know, a democracy has ever existed. I mean, I actually advocate if you're on welfare, you lose your vote. And you don't get your vote back until you're off welfare and supporting yourself again. But boy,
well,
I sure wouldn't be very popular, would I?
Well, the issue of democracy is a very sore point for me because I have watched repeatedly paraded through all of the media at all levels this constant use of the word democracy.
Exactly.
We here in the United States are not a democracy. We are a constitutional republic, and that's very meaningful. Unless people understand the difference between a constitutional republic and a democracy, they'll just continue to be hoodwinked. I like to describe, in fact, our founders of our country refused to even use the word democracy in any of their, you know, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, etc., because they knew what a democracy was. And some lady on the radio show one day said to me, you know, could I just, you know, describe or say what a democracy was? Oh, I said, yes, I have a very good example of that. I said, it's two wolves and a sheep sitting around a table deciding what's for dinner.
That's exactly the perfect way to describe a democracy. Mm-hmm. And our people, our country, because of the fact that the oligarchs own the media and mm-hmm. program the people, most of the people don't even watch the news. They're programmed by the soap operas or the, the series that they watch. Mm-hmm. And this is our informed audience voting people into power. In my country, when I become president or empress, that's what I'll be empress, and I will teach people how to vote. And it's not so much they have to know how to read and write, because some of the smartest people I've ever known didn't know how to read and write. I'm a former teacher, and I taught some of these people, multimillionaires that didn't know how to read and write. But there are ways of teaching people so that you don't, that they don't have to read and write, but they will become informed voters. What we have is we have voters that vote for the best looking guy, the slickest speech, the best ads, or the red state, blue state. I'm a blue state voter. I don't care if you're a red state politician and you have a far better platform. I always vote blue, so I'm never going to vote for anybody who is red. I mean, my God, this is ridiculous. The voting system that we've got here in the United States. As I said, when I become Empress of the planet, I will decree that people, maybe I'll give them money to do it. They go to school one night a week to learn about their government. And the blue people can come in, the red people can come in. They've got to listen to both sides. And neither side will be able to say, oh, I'm a blue person, all of you blue people listen to me. No, they go forward and they speak their piece, and nobody knows whether they're a blue person or a red person. They're just presenting things. And am I too far off? Is this dream unattainable? Is there any country in the world that has this?
I'll tell you, it's really interesting. Two things happened before the election, in fact, quite a ways before election. And one of it was I got an email from an ardent Ron Paul supporter who was now working with the Constitutional Party. And
yes.
They said, let's keep the ball rolling for Ron Paul. He's created this whole a group of people who were following him. Let's, take advantage of the rally, of the grassroots rally of Ron Paul. And I said, oh, wonderful idea. And then I went on to read how they were going to, and eventually did get Chuck Baldwin to run on the Constitutional Party. Libertarian Party, and they had a big long piece about Ron Paul, a passing letter, glowing report about what he was able to draw people together to get to follow him and his position on constitutionality. And I got a similar letter, but not exactly like that, from the Libertarian Party. So I wrote both of them. And I said, you know what? What you folks need to do, first of all, I broke their hearts. Sure. I said, neither one of the Libertarian Party and the Constitutional Party, and I believe the Constitutional Party has more ballot access in more states than the Libertarian Party does, of any of the third parties, in other words. And I said, neither one of these parties is ever going to elect a president. You're just not. You don't have the ballot access. You don't have the numbers. You don't have the organizational skill. You don't have the money. I said, why don't you build on the Ron Paul revolution by teaching people how to vote, how to become poll watchers, how to become poll workers or precinct captains. Why don't you teach people how to do a write-in vote on an electronic voting box. I don't even know how to do that. And I always preach to people. I said, if you really want your vote to count, get an absentee ballot and vote on that, because at least they can't make it electronically disappear. So I sent this back. I said, we have to stop thinking outside the box. We have to start acting. We have to start actually being out the box. imagine if they all joined forces, spent whatever, you know, treasure they had to do that, teach people their civic duty, get people civically involved, get people to learn to write in vote and write in Ron Paul's name. I said, if millions and millions, and Ron, I'm not saying that Ron Paul would win, okay? But of the three candidates that were offered, Ron Paul certainly had 20 years of proving that he had a record that was aligned with constitutional principles. The other two did not by a long shot. So I said, instead of doing that same, same old, same old, same old, you know, an exercise in futility, why don't you combine forces and work to, if anything, get millions of people to write in Ron Paul's name? Now, okay, Ron Paul's not going to win. But the message would be that millions and millions of people did vote for him. They're getting smart. They're wising up. They're finally realizing the two parties are no different from one another. And because, the, as many of the people, third-party people have found out, the states are working very hard to keep them from getting ballot access. There's all kinds of rules and regulations in all the different states that keep them from getting on the ballot where they can have prominence. Okay? So that's another area that they have to work on. So, but neither one of them took my advice.
So. Well, it's very amazing. I honestly think that conservatives have a death wish because they don't seem to want to cooperate with any group except the group that feels exactly the same way that they are. You know, if they're a yellow person and they're a conservative, they don't want to work with the pink people who are conservatives. Mm-hmm. Or if they're a blue person, they don't want to work with the, I shouldn't use blue because that's blue and red. If they're a lavender person, they don't want to work with the chartreuse people.
Yeah.
And if we don't concentrate on the Constitution of the United States, at least what used to be our Constitution, and if we don't let the petty little things that separate us keep us from working together, it's the divide and conquer. They've absolutely been successful in dividing us so that the libertarians and the constitutionalists won't ever work with each other.
That's
and
right.
Then we've got the Green Party. Something
yep.
I tried to put in motion in January of 2008 was the Purple People Party. And the idea was, in your area, and of course what I wanted is that all the Greens, all the Libertarians, and all the Constitutionalists would choose to vote third party for all the representatives in their area. So rather than voting in the same old Democrat Republican, all of the third parties and all of the independent-minded people would vote for they would choose which one to vote for, and they would vote for that one. And it never happened. I could not get anybody interested in helping me with it or spreading the idea. And I don't know how to get beyond this red-blue divide.
Well, it's really interesting that you bring this up because I've spent quite a bit of time in the last, I would say, 3 months working with a man in Texas, and who remains unnamed for obvious reasons. Some people chasing him down.
Of course.
We're putting together a massive proprietary computer-based system for doing exactly what you want. It will have the ability to go all the way down to the precinct level. It will educate people about their civic responsibility and how to go about it. It will have all kinds of themes of, it will actually touch on all the major socio-political groups around the country and affiliate with them. There will be prizes, like exactly what you're talking about, money, prizes for people to play a game called, it's going to be called Mind Quark, and the whole outfit's called Max Force. It won't be, they're beta testing it now with one large county in Texas doing things at the precinct level. But it's all about education. It's all about getting people involved. It's all about, you know, giving people what they're no longer getting school, which is their whole civics thing. It is constitutionally driven. It's a, you know, based on the Constitution, in other words, in our constitutional republic. About voting, it's got to do with people making a commitment to hold
Can you hold that thought?
Oh, sure.
Because this is an incredible idea. I'd like to go into depth, but we've got to go work at that company store for a little bit and get some more money to keep this radio network on. You're listening to RumorMillNewsRadio.com on the MicroEffect.com radio network. We're speaking with Dr. Deneen Peterson of StopTheNorthAmericanUnion.com. Danger Zone, one more time. This is Raylan Allen from RumorMillNews.com. You're listening to RumorMillNewsRadio.com on the MicroEffect.com radio network, and we are talking with Dr. Deneen Peterson of StopTheNorthAmericanUnion.com. And Dr. Peterson, what many people don't realize is the North American Union that you and many others are trying to stop is the same darn thing as the European Union. And we're just going to be eco-slaves for the company store if this gets passed. But anyway, you were talking about this marvelous new idea that sounds like what I was trying to do with my Purple People Party. And can you continue? I'm just absolutely fascinated with this. Can you please tell us more?
Sure. The plan as it's drawn out, the very first sentence in the plan says, President Reagan once said that government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. So, you know, we believe that. We strongly believe that, obviously, and I think a lot of people are waking up to that fact. So, and what we're planning to do, we're planning to dedicate our intellect and our time and our resources, which will be considerable, in a sustained fight to revive and strengthen our Constitution. That's our goal. The goal is to protect and defend our individual, state, and national sovereignty by creating the socio-political networking system combined with mass communication abilities. And that's it in a nutshell. It's called MaxForce.
It's called.
Then we have a. We're going to have a. Go ahead.
No, I couldn't hear the name. What's the name of it?
MaxForce.
MaxForce. M A X F O R T H.
No, F O R C E.
MaxForce. Okay, the maximum force, which is all of us people.
Right. Exactly. In fact, one of the foundations will involve will be called the People Power Foundation. So. Another will be Wake Up America. Another one will be, we're going to have a political action committee called Slam Back Pack. And another one is going to be a political advocacy organization, which will be Keep America Sovereign. So, and then we'll have a game. A game will be interwoven throughout all of these things that will have people able to actually earn prizes for reading, being able to do certain things. It'll be woven throughout the entire platform so that people will have the opportunity, and the people, the sponsors, et cetera, the people that are organizations that are involved in it, they all have the opportunity to earn some money through this system, the way it's going to be set up. So
this is just incredible. I mean, can you see people, you know, who don't have enough money to buy a loaf of bread, to, you know, for the rest of the week for their kids' school lunch? The parents can go down, play the game, win some money, buy the bread, and
get educated, motivated, involved, because it does involve people that become affiliated with MaxForce are actually pledging to become civically involved at all levels, local. You know, I'm very fond of saying to people two things. One, if you read Tragedy and Hope and you listen to other globalists from years gone by, maybe a century ago even, they said, look, you know, the one world government is going to happen. They called it one world order, new world order they call it. One world government is going to happen. It's just a matter of when, not if.
Yeah.
And that the way they're going to do it is incrementally, and they're going to do it from the bottom up. And I tell people repeatedly, they need to get involved in their own local community. I don't care if you get the job as a dog catcher. You need to get inside of the political structure of your town, city, state, whatever level you want to function at, to take our country back, because it's the only way we're going to do it. Our politicians at all levels, not just down in Washington, D.C., are corrupted. And there's a reason why they're corrupted. We have a thing we call our secret sauce. And the corruption is, I used to think it was an issue of power. Oh, no, it's money. And the money is there in every state, and we're going to expose it. So it's a secret right now. It can't be discussed beyond that.
I think,
you know how they're always sticking their hand out,
yeah.
more taxes?
Yes.
They don't need to.
Oh, no, I know. We had Walter Burian on.
Burian, that's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. We had him on, and he explained to everybody that we don't need no stinking taxes. Mm-hmm. The government has enough investments to last mm-hmm. us for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way down to the city level. Probably all the way down to even, districts within city levels. So, boy, this just sounds so great. This is something that I could really get behind. This is something that Rumor Mill has preached since we've been around. You know, you've got to take it to the grassroots.
Yep.
You've got to get involved in your community. And mm-hmm. I have to do a little bit of bragging. One of our agents in England ran for Parliament and won.
Oh.
Isn't that extraordinary?
That's
now,
fabulous, yeah.
I knew full well that he could never get in touch with me again after he won, but we all verified it, we all congratulated him, and that was the last we ever saw of him. Hopefully he's still alive. But this is what we all have to do. We can't just, talk on radio. I mean, Ron Paul ran, but, oh, my God, it would have been so much better. And I don't know whether his wife's illness had anything to do with it, but you and I both know that at the top of the game, they play hardball. And when I say that, they very easily could have done something to Ron Paul's wife. And when he went to visit her, pulled him aside and said, hey, look, unless you want your entire family dying the same way she is, you're going to back out. You're not going to run for the Constitutional Party. You're not going to screw this up. This is what we're going to do. We planned Obama for 1,000 years. We're not going to let somebody like you, Dr. Paul, stand in our way. And what are you going to do if that happens?
They did exactly the same thing to Ross Perot.
Oh, of course.
When he started to gather steam, they pulled the rug out from under him exactly that same way that you're describing. And he alluded to it. He didn't come, of course, right out and said, well, they're going to kill my family if I don't, get off the soapbox here. But that's exactly what they did do. One of the parts of our plan is to also... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I worked with Ron Paul way back when, and I keep thinking, I don't even know if he'll remember me, but maybe he will. But I think I'm going to invite him to be on the radio show, because he's got that Ron Paul when I was meeting Ross Perot. He's got Ross Perot, PerotReports.com out. He's still out there. He's still trying to educate people. So
I often wondered about him, because he went into total oblivion after, he sort of let us all down out here.
I would imagine that what happened is the big boys started going after him in the financial wars that they conduct. And if this happened, he probably lost millions, if not hundreds of millions, and maybe realized that for the good of the whole, he should draw back. And for all we know, he's doing things underground. Because I cannot imagine that Ross Perot, the patriot that he is, would ever stop trying to save this country. He just probably, had to go silent, run silent, run deep.
Exactly. I tell you, to this day, his famous quote about NAFTA has come true, the great sucking sound.
I know. Every single thing he said was absolutely right on. And, history has proved the man right. And so I'm going to try and reach him and get him on Rumor Mill News Radio. He's going to love that.
one of the things that bothered me for a long time is that eligible voters are declining year in and year out. People have stopped voting. And I don't think it's a matter of that they're lazy. I think it's a matter of they understand very clearly that all the pre-election promises that are made are not kept. In fact, lots of times they're 180, what they actually vote in the Congress is 180 degrees from what their intents were, when they were being out there on the stump trying to get elected.
One of the things
that Max Force is trying to do is it actually wants to hold, as this is part of our task, to hold all elected officials accountable for their oaths, for their promises, for their actions, and we're going to do it with vigilance, oversight, reporting, and civil action.
Incredible.
So
means
this dog will have to fight, in other words.
Yes. I have often wondered why there has not been a group that sued politicians for lying to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And for not keeping their promise. And of course, you and I know what the reason is. A politician's going to tell you anything to get elected. And then when they get in there, they have to do what their masters tell them to do.
Well, and the other part of that is that the fact that the people that are in the position to take them to task are in the honeypot with them.
Absolutely.
I mean, think about executive orders. This is something that's bothered me for a long time, that the president can sit at his desk and write out an executive order, put it in, have it turned over to the Federal Register, and within 30 or 60 or 90 days, depending on who you ask, including the people at the Federal Register, it becomes law.
I know.
And the only thing that deters it from becoming law is a member of our Congress standing up and say, that's unconstitutional. You can't do that. You can't pass that law. And, of course, the president's not sitting there writing these executive orders. His handlers are writing these executive orders.
Well,
and so
this is something that most of our listening audience don't really understand. None of our laws are written by the politicians or their staffers. They are written by these huge worldwide NGOs, non-governmental organizations. NGOs are part of the non-profit people, and the non-profits are funded by these huge multinational corporations. So literally, if we've got any blue listeners out there, NPR is an NGO working for the Rockefellers and all of their multinational corporate interests. It's not National Public Radio. It is New World Order Radio. And this is just one example of the propaganda arms of the New World Order. And the NGOs, you're right. A president doesn't write his executive orders, and our politicians don't write the laws that they pass. They don't even read the laws they pass.
Well, not only that, what they do now is they'll have a 1,000-plus page bill. They'll bring it out from presses 2 hours before they're going to vote, plop it on the desk, and say, okay, we're going to vote in 2 hours. I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course, but that's the route of march. That's the latest way. All of these bills that are made of combinations of so many disparate parts that it would look like you took every animal in the world and stuck it into one, parts of it,
absolutely,
stuck it into one thing.
Absolutely.
That's what these bills are. The titles on these bills, the summaries on these bills, are the total antithesis of what is actually in the body of the bill. It's like a joke. And the joke, unfortunately, is on we the people.
I know.
So, I have a couple of quotes that I like to use, and because it absolutely shows how outrageous this is. This was a quote made by Paul the Gals, again, about executive order. He says, stroke of the pen, law of the land, kind of cool. And there was another person who was Bruce Babbitt. This was in the New York Times in 1999, so I'm not making this up. It says, we've switched the rules of the game. We're not trying to do anything legislatively. They don't have to. They can create an executive order and write all the laws. And what did the Constitution say? The power of legislation belongs where? Belongs in the House of Representatives, not at the end of a president's pen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and one other thing I meant to stick in there when you were talking about the NGOs and the corporate masters.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are the foundations, the Carnegie, the Ford, and the Rockefeller foundations. I mean, they're
absolutely
what's behind all of that stuff.
Yeah, those are the nonprofits that I was talking about. And
okay,
if you take a look at all of these nonprofits, there used to be a place on the web where you could go and you would see that John Kerry's wife, Teresa Hines, literally has so much money. And you know, her husband, John Hines, from where she got all this money, was really a good conservative American. And my God, the entire Hines family must be rolling in their graves right now to see what she is using it for. But she was funding so many different things, different NGOs, and it was just one woman that I think isn't quite all together mentally, and who knows who is her Svengali or her Rasputin, you know, standing behind her, getting her to do all the things that she is doing with this money.
Yes, that's very true. And how did John Hines die?
Oh, well, I know full well he was murdered. He was in a plane, and the landing gear didn't go down.
Mm-hmm.
And so they either sent up a helicopter, I can't remember if it was a helicopter, or another plane that was going to try to pull the landing gear down. Well, the idiots, why in the world didn't they just do a belly landing? I'm sure it would have been a lot safer than what they did. Well, anyway, when the other plane got really close to Hines' plane, suddenly there was an explosion. The other plane exploded. And the explosion caused Hines' plane to go down also. But of course, the mainstream media is not going to report any of this. The only reason that I know about it is there was a Navy SEAL who was part of my security team that was asked by the Navy to go back and look into that because Senator Hines was working, was working to save the United States. And so they had to get rid of the people that were working to save the United States, including Senator John Tower. I think they died within days of each other.
Well, what about Paul Wellstone?
I know. It's not just...
Same with him.
It's not just Republicans that are killed.
And then it was... In one of those last two newsletters that I posted on your website, there was a man in there, I'm trying to think what his name was, in the section of the newsletter that talks about how corrupt is our Congress. He gave a 5-minute speech from the floor of the House. It was just a fabulous speech where he's talking about these new light bulbs, the ones that have curlicues, you know, things, and how our Congress has legislated. They have mercury inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole laundry list of things you have to do if you drop them accidentally while you're installing them, like in a ceiling fixture or something. You have to seal off your house, and they have a whole list of things that you have to do to protect yourself from them. But the most rotten thing about them is all of these bulbs are made in China. By law, they are being made in China. I mean,
oh my gosh.
If people don't understand how corrupt our Congress is, they're never going to. And that one little short video of 5 minutes, and what's funny about it is, sitting in the seat right behind this Ted Poe is his name, sitting behind him was Tancredo. And the expressions on his face as he put together this 5-minute soliloquy about these bulbs and the law that's behind them is priceless. It's absolutely priceless. But Ted Poe was on the same airplane with Ron Paul that had difficulties there. during the campaign. So, yep.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing. I mean, it is... I mean, that was what I was talking about with Ross Perot. You know, why in the world isn't he out again? You know, more than likely he had to go silent the same way that Ron Paul had to go silent for a while. If you draw too much attention to yourself, you are absolutely destroyed. I don't know if I told you about that family that I know or that I knew that within two separate plane crashes, they were completely wiped out. In other words, when the New World Order threatened someone, like I do believe they threatened George Herbert Walker Bush back in the 50s, they said, you join us or we're wiping your DNA from the planet. And they can do that. They can wipe the DNA from the planet. You get together at a family gathering and they give you some sort of Ebola. And within an hour, the entire family dies, and, you know, they make up a story, you know, like a plane crash or a train wreck or, you know, the house had gas leak and everybody died. I mean, of course, now people are smart enough that they would realize, but, you know, back when my friend's family were, you know, was killed almost 30 years ago, maybe 40 years ago now, nobody was asking questions. And
well, the most famous thing is what bothers me is how many corrupt coroners are out there where everybody is identified as suicided. I mean, Clinton in Arkansas, with all the people that died around him and his little drug operation up there in MENA, what was interesting is they actually made a law in Arkansas that said if a coroner identifies a dead person as suicided, all investigation ceases.
Amazing.
How do you like that one?
Oh, my God. That is just amazing.
It's sickening is what it is.
Well, you know, we go back, talk about Clinton. I think about Ron Brown, the one that died in the plane crash.
Yes.
And that autopsy, it was done by three Air Force doctors, and they stated that he had a bullet hole in the top of his head.
They said the back of his head was blown off.
Exactly. But where did that ever lead to? I wonder what happened to those three doctors. Where are they?
Nothing happened to them because they ruled in the right direction. They said, I don't know. Didn't the ruling come down, though, that he was it was a tragic accident? I mean,
they never sent any tail on any doggy. I think that was the ruling that came down. And, of course, we still don't know why that pilot flew into a mountain, you know, who gave him the wrong coordinates or if he was one of these mind control people and he gets triggered and he says, oh, that's the trigger that tells me I'm supposed to fly into this wonderful mountain and have a wonderful time.
The other thing, anything that's controlled by electronics, which planes are full of electronics.
Exactly.
I mean, there's all sorts of software programs that could be inserted last minute that don't show you the true altitude or the height of the mountain that's coming up or they can do something from the ground. I mean, there are so many ways they can kill you today. It's almost
the man who would have been the next chancellor of Austria, Jörg Haider, just died in a very unusual car accident. And he was driving a Volkswagen that just popped. You know, it was one of these heavy-duty Volkswagens that they build like tanks so that people... elected officials that drive them, you know, will survive bombs and bullets and this sort of stuff. Well, the police in Austria were blaming the car. The Volkswagen went out. It had some sort of mechanical problem. Well, Volkswagen came out and said that, I think it was the vice president of Volkswagen said, this car can be remotely controlled. And whoever had a key to Jörg Haider's car, that is the person that you should be looking to see who set up the remote control of this car. Mm-hmm. And that goes right back to Diana and Dodie.
Yeah.
Their car was, the car that they were killed in was stolen. And I have a secret document that was actually published in an Austrian newspaper. And a friend of mine made a photocopy of it and sent it to me. And that document says that they stole the car and they added the electronics so the car could be remotely controlled. And that was a CIA document. So, you know, if somebody wants you dead, unless you've got God on your side and the angels, you're not going to survive. And Dr. Peterson, this has been such a great show. I've really enjoyed this. You're going to have to agree to come back. I know you're going south for the winter. Can you please get in touch when you're all settled, and we'll have you on the program again.
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to. Okay. I had fun, too. Thank you for inviting me.
We've been talking with Dr. Deneen Peterson of StopTheNorthAmericanUnion.com. Go check out that page. It's got more information on than you can imagine. We're listening to The Company Store by LeftyDave.com on the MicroEffect.com radio network. And we'll be back. Take half back taxes, work a phone to drive.